I now continue with topic number 3. When I use the word conspiracy, I'm doing so in the strict legal sense. A conspiracy is the term which refers to any situation in which two or more individuals join together to plan and execute a crime. And that is exactly what the Federal Reserve Board, not the banks, and the Treasury have done. The key to it all is the legal concept of a pledge. For nearly 20 years now, the United States Treasury has been using a pretended authority to sell Federal Reserve gold at will. That pretended authority is based upon a claim which has been made to sound plausible but is totally false. That claim is the Treasury's assertion that the Federal Reserve gold is a pledge, or as Simon really said, sort of a pledge. That is why Simon's testimony of 1974, which I just quoted, was sanitized so carefully. To show you what has been done, first I should define what a pledge is in law. First I will describe it in legal terminology, because this is a legal battleground. The officers and directors of the regional Federal Reserve banks will have to take legal steps if they are to save themselves. But I also want to make sure everyone understands what is involved. So I will try my best to give you examples of what I am talking about. Legally, a pledge is defined as a bailment or transfer of personal property as a security for some debt or obligation. It is redeemable on certain terms, but if the debtor defaults on the contract, the creditor can sell the property which the debtor has turned over to him. In this situation, the debtor is called a pledgor because he is pledging to pay or repay something. The creditor is called the pledgee. He holds on to physical possession of the pledgor's property until the pledge is satisfied. For a contract of pledge of property to exist, three elements must be present. First, the pledgor must turn over possession of the property to the pledgee. Second, title to the property, that is, actual ownership, is retained by the pledgor. Third, and this is essential, there must be a lien of some sort against the property involved for payment of a debt or performance of an obligation, and that debt or obligation must be due the pledgee by the pledgor or some other person. For my fellow attorneys, just a reminder that a contract of pledge is one form of hypothecation. Hypothecation, of course, is the contractual power of a creditor over the property of a debtor to cause the property to be sold to satisfy the debt. Pledge applies specifically when the property of the debtor is physically handed over to the creditor. Now let me come down to earth and give you an everyday example. Suppose you needed some money and decided to pawn your gold watch. You go to the pawn shop and physically turn over your gold watch to the pawnbroker. In return, the pawnbroker gives you two things. He hands you some money as a loan, and he also hands you a receipt for your watch. Your pawn receipt gives you the legal right for some period of time to go back in and redeem your watch. That is, if you want your watch back, you give the pawnbroker the receipt plus the money you borrowed plus some interest. My friends, a pawn transaction like this is a contract of pledge. You are the debtor because he has loaned you money. He keeps your watch in his possession as security for your loan. During the redemption period, you have the right to get your watch back if you pay the loan. But if you do not repay the loan by a certain deadline, you default on your loan. The pawnbroker may then sell your watch. Now then, my friends, the United States Treasury claims that a similar arrangement applies to the Federal Reserve gold. The property at issue is America's entire monetary gold hoard instead of a gold watch. But they claim that the same principle applies, that the gold is a pledge. In effect, the Treasury thereby claims to be in the position of a giant pawnbroker. By referring to the gold as a pledge, the Treasury has claimed, in effect, that the Federal Reserve System pawned the gold. Can you imagine? Beyond that, the Treasury is behaving as if the Federal Reserve System had defaulted in some way. The Treasury has disposed of most all of the Federal Reserve gold just like a pawnbroker. And this has been done without even notifying 11 of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks. The Federal Reserve Board of Governors right here in Washington knew about it. So did certain people at the New York Bank. But they have left the other 11 regional banks in the dark. My friends, the United States Treasury pretends to have the authority to sell off the Federal Reserve gold at will. That is what William Simon, who parades today as the darling of the conservatives, said as Treasury Secretary in 1974. This pretended authority to get rid of our gold is based on the Treasury's contention that it is a pledge. But is it, or was it ever really a pledge? The Treasury's claim does not make it so, all by itself. That famous quotation of Abraham Lincoln applies just as well now as it did in Audio Letter 59. A flower does not become a rose just because I call it a rose. I will now point out some facts which prove that the Treasury's possession of the Federal Reserve gold was never on the basis of a pledge. The Treasury pretended authority to sell the gold is completely fraudulent, and there has been collusion between the Treasury and the Federal Reserve Board here in Washington. As a result, 11 of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks have been swindled. They are claiming assets, gold assets, in the mistaken belief that those assets still exist. To trace the true status of the Federal Reserve gold, we need to go back to the beginning in 1933 and 1934. On March 4, 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt was inaugurated president for his first term. The very next evening, just before midnight, he declared a national emergency. He proclaimed a week-long bank holiday, closing all banks and placing an embargo on gold payments. Then the Treasury Secretary, William H. Wooden, made a public statement to quiet the fears of the people. He said, quote, "It is ridiculous and misleading to say that we have gone off the gold standard any more than we have gone off the currency standard. We are definitely on the gold standard. Gold merely cannot be obtained for several days," unquote. But they always lie, my friends. The Treasury Secretary said it would be just a few days. But it was 42 years before Americans would regain the right to own gold. Because only 4 days after he spoke, on March 9, 1933, the National Banking Emergency Act was rushed into law. Under that act, American citizens were forced to turn in all of their gold. It was collected by the Federal Reserve System at the old bargain price of $20.67 per ounce. Despite those soothing words of the Treasury Secretary only days before, America was off the gold standard. The act also authorized the Treasury Secretary to instruct the Federal Reserve to deliver its gold into possession of the Treasury. The Treasury Secretary did issue those instructions on January 17, 1934, but the 1933 law did not take title of the gold away from the Federal Reserve. It only required that it be physically held by the Treasury for safekeeping. Finally, the Gold Reserve Act of 1934 was passed on January 30 of that year. Section 2A of the Act says, quote, "Upon the approval of this Act, all right, title, and interest, and every claim of the Federal Reserve Board, of every Federal Reserve Bank, and of every Federal Reserve agent in and to any and all gold coin and gold bullion, shall pass to and are hereby vested in the United States," unquote. My friends, that sounds ironclad, doesn't it? It sounds as if the Treasury took over ownership of the gold from the Federal Reserve. But the fact is that it was only a pretended transfer. On January 24, 1934, 6 days before the Act was passed, one brave congressman tried to expose the entire ruse. He was a bitter enemy of the Federal Reserve System, and on the floor of Congress, he gave a speech that revealed exactly what was afoot. Describing the provisions of the Act for the gold transfer, then Congressman Lewis T. McFadden said, quote, "It provides that the United States government shall give the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks new gold certificates to the full value of the loot. The gold certificates will give the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks legal title to the gold. And the United States Treasury will be nothing more than its physical custodian. The Secretary of the Treasury will give the Federal Reserve Banks gold for their new gold certificates whenever they ask for it. It is a fraudulent transfer," unquote. The situation McFadden described is exactly what happened. The Federal Reserve System owns the gold through its gold certificates. The Treasury only acts as physical custodian, and this arrangement has, in legal terms, been confirmed, ratified, and condoned by the Federal Reserve and Treasury balance sheets for 46 years. It is the fact, no matter what the words of the 1934 Act may seem to say. And law, my friends, deals with the questions of fact, not just assertions. Now let me return to the present-day claim of the Treasury that it holds the Federal Reserve gold as a pledge. That claim is in direct contradiction to the Treasury's own balance sheets. As I detailed in Audio Letter 59, the Treasury is a debtor with regard to the gold, while the Federal Reserve is the creditor. But if it were a pledge, as claimed by the Treasury, the reverse would be true. The Treasury is trying to turn day into night and night into day simply by calling it a pledge. That raises two questions, my friends. First, what pretended authority was the basis of Simon's 1974 claim that the gold is sort of a pledge? Second, how could the Treasury get away with this fraud? The answer to the first question is a June 30, 1961 Act of Congress, the Old Series Currency Adjustment Act. The citation is 31 U.S.C. 912. The Treasury misled Congress in 1961 with the excuse that it was to enable the retirement of a variety of old, obsolete currencies, including certain gold certificates used as currencies. But nowhere did the Act define the term gold certificates. The real but unstated purpose of the Act was to provide a pretended authority to dispose of Federal Reserve gold. In fact, gold began leaving the country under the London Gold Pool Agreement only 3 months later. By virtue of that act, the Treasury pretends that the gold became what Simon called sort of a pledge. The Treasury claims a right that it does not legally have to convert the gold to its own use and give the Federal Reserve System nothing but paper money or bookkeeping credits in exchange. In this way, the Federal Reserve banks have been swindled out of their gold bullion. That brings me to the second question. That is, how could the Treasury get away with it? The answer involves collusion by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors here in Washington. In Audio Letter 59, I suggested that you write to the President and Directors of the Federal Reserve Bank in your region. I suggested that you urge them to press for an independent, reliable physical inventory of the Federal Reserve gold and Treasury vaults. Based on the replies of which you have sent me copies, a very significant pattern has emerged. I do not include the New York Bank in what I am about to say, but the responding chairmen and presidents of the other 11 regional banks have said basically two things. Number one, not one single chairman or president of a regional Federal Reserve Bank says he has ever seen the gold or had it inventoried. Instead, to a man, they are all relying totally on the assurances of the Treasury and their own Federal Reserve Board here in Washington. Number two, not one single reply reflects a correct understanding of his own enormous legal liability involving the gold. Every indication is that they were never properly informed that they were taking on this responsibility. My friends, I know this sounds astonishing, but the correspondence demonstrating these two points is just too overwhelming to ignore. Let me just read you a few quotes to show you what I mean. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, President William F. Ford wrote, quote, "As you may know, I have no jurisdiction over the stock of gold at Fort Knox. However, I have discussed the issues that you raise with my colleagues at the Federal Reserve Board in Washington." Unquote. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, President Frank E. Morris wrote, quote, "I have never had reason to doubt that the gold stock and shipments have been properly accounted for." Unquote. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, President Roger Guffey wrote, quote, "I did not perform a physical count of all assets of the bank at the time I became president, nor have I conducted a physical inventory of the nation's gold stock held by the United States Treasury Department. As I am sure you are aware, the nation's gold reserves are no longer held by the Federal Reserve System, but rather the title and custody is held by the United States Treasury as a result of the Gold Reserve Act of 1934. Unquote. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, Chairman John W. Ekman wrote, quote, "While the 12 Reserve Banks and their directors have a degree of local autonomy, the questions you and Mr. Durrell ask and the actions you request are more logically in the province of the Board of Governors." Unquote. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, President Ernest T. Bowman wrote to my good friend, Mr. Edward Durrell, quote, "With respect to the gold which underlies the gold certificates held by the Federal Reserve Banks, I have made no effort to eyeball that gold. I am prepared, with no reservations whatever, to accept the representations of those government officials responsible for the gold that they do, in fact, have it." Unquote. And from the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, President Robert P. Black wrote, quote, "I would like to emphasize, as strongly as I know how, that neither the Federal Reserve System nor the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond has custody or control of the gold stock of the United States." Unquote. Then he quotes the gold legislation of 1933 and 34, which I discussed for you earlier. And he concludes on that basis that, quote, "It seems clear to me that this legislation removes from the Federal Reserve System any responsibility for the custody and control of the gold stock of the United States, unquote. My friends, it is little wonder that the chairmen and presidents of the regional Federal Reserve banks are so dangerously misinformed. Their own legal responsibility for the gold is based not on custody, but on ownership. And as I have already established in detail for you, that ownership is not open to dispute. It is reflected in the gold certificates owned by the Federal Reserve banks. But here is the shocker. The 12 regional banks do not have those certificates, even though they are shown on their respective balance sheets as gold certificate accounts. Where did all those certificates go? Here is the answer. I quote now from a letter dated January 9, 1981, to my good friend Mr. Durrell. It was written by Robert P. Black, President of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. Quote, "I am unable to send you a copy of the certificate you requested. The gold certificate account shown on the balance sheets of the Federal Reserve Banks is managed by the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System in Washington, D.C. Amounts in this account are allocated to the 12 Federal Reserve Banks by the Board of Governors," unquote. My friends, I speak again now as a lawyer. In any conspiracy to commit a crime, the circle of conspirators is always kept as small as possible. The fewer the people involved, the less the risk of exposure. And that is exactly the pattern that is emerging now. By every evidence up to now, the officers and directors of 11 of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks are not party to the gold conspiracy. They are dangerously misinformed, but they appear to be acting in good faith. It is they who will be faced with enormous fines, prison terms, and ruined lives when the scandal breaks. And yet, they appear to be blissfully unaware of their great danger. And that, my friends, is the second telltale sign in all great conspiracies. The conspirators always make sure that there will be someone else handy to take the blame. For example, when the CIA, on orders, assassinated President John F. Kennedy, they made sure a patsy named Lee Harvey Oswald was on hand. And they also made sure he was silenced before he could raise too many doubts. Likewise, the conspirators within the Treasury and the Federal Reserve Board of Governors have made sure that they too will have their scapegoats. Those scapegoats are to be the officers and directors of the regional Federal Reserve banks. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So when the gold scandal breaks, as it will, they will be bundled off to prison to satisfy the rage of the American public. That is, my friends, unless they take action now to save themselves. During the past 6 weeks or so, they have been put on legal notice for the first time ever about the missing Federal Reserve gold, so they can break free of the web of intrigue if they will. They can do this by taking the initiative to bring about an independent, conclusive, physical inventory of the gold. By doing that, they can free themselves of any taint of suspicion. But if they choose not to act, my friends, they will only be sealing their own fate, because they are now on legal notice. And if they choose inaction, they will make themselves accessories after the fact in the biggest scandal in American history, the gold scandal. The choice is up to them. My friends, it's up to us, you and me, to alert the Federal Reserve Bank officials to these things. And so I will be sending a copy of this tape to the president of each Federal Reserve Bank by registered mail. I need for you to back me up with your letters. I am about to read you a sample letter to get you started. Please write a letter like this to the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in your region. I told you how to get the address in audio letter 59. Send the original to the president of the Federal Reserve Bank, and send a copy to each one of the other directors. A photocopy will do. And as always, be sure to keep a copy for your own file. Now, here's the sample letter I suggest. Feel free to use your own words, but please do not cut corners. We must have action, and soon, because time is fast running out. Dear Mr. So-and-so, I am writing to you again because of my continuing deep concern over the loss of our gold reserves. Thank you for your earlier reply, but I am concerned that you do not appear to be aware of certain extremely large legal responsibilities on your part. In a recent cassette tape, Dr. Beter has given a legal discussion of these responsibilities on your part. Dr. Beter speaks as a lawyer and a former counsel to the United States Export-Import Bank, the largest governmental bank in the Western world. Therefore, I do not believe that you can safely afford to ignore his legal briefing of your responsibilities regarding the gold. Dr. Beter has notified his listeners that he is sending a copy of this cassette tape, audio letter number 61, to you by registered mail. It will take you and the other directors of your bank just 1 hour to hear what he has to say. I cannot urge you strongly enough to do just that. After you hear Dr. Beter's tape, I believe you will agree with me that you should take steps to protect your own personal interests. To that end, I urge you to demand immediate action by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors to arrange an independent, conclusive physical inventory of the gold in Treasury vaults. As you will hear Dr. Beter explain, you do have the authority to bring this about. Please insist that the committee which oversees the inventory include the president or another director from each one of the regional reserve banks. You dare not delegate this duty to anyone else, including even the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. Your own personal vital interests are at stake. If you will do this, it can only have one of two possible outcomes, both good. One possibility is that the inventory will prove that all the gold is there and Dr. Beter is wrong. That would lay to rest 7 years of unanswered questions which have undermined confidence in America's banking system. The only other possibility would be to prove that much, if not all, of the gold is missing. In that case, you will be taking the first step toward correcting the real causes of our crumbling economy, and you will have removed yourself from any taint of suspicion. Either the gold is there or it is not there. Dr. Beter is not afraid to learn the truth. Are you? Followed by your signature. My friends, once again I'm asking you to go to work. Please get your letter and copies off to the Federal Reserve Bank in your region right away. As I said before, I hold out no hope for the New York Bank, but the other 11 regional banks appear to be a real ray of hope, and if they will do their duty and use their latent powers, they can save themselves while doing a great service to America. Now it is time for just a few final words as my last-minute summary. Today, January 20, 1981, is Inauguration Day. To all outward appearances, a new administration has begun. But thanks to the obscure, recent Bronte decision of the Supreme Court, the change is only on the surface. The real battle to control the United States government continues unabated. My friends, these things cannot be allowed to continue. It is up to you and me to do our constitutional duty to save our land. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.